the writer and publisher, the writers who are also in the game industry, or want to be, more importantly, the ones who want to be, is that they keep telling me about this Tolkien-esque setting that they're building. They are building this world, and they have been building this world for 13 years. And they've developed 3 languages for it. And when they finally get around to finishing it someday, it is going to be like the most epic, amazing thing ever. As a hobby, that is awesome. That is a great way to waste 13 years of your life. If you actually want to do something with it and produce it, you have killed yourself. You have murdered yourself. Because whatever you think is hot and sexy now, it will not be by the time you're finished it if you're taking 13 years on it. And you'll have burnt yourself out. So with that in mind, I've broken down the very basics of world building, because like you can go to writing seminars and you can get like really in-depth. There are college courses on this stuff. I don't have time for that. I have an hour at my lunch breaks to design the world that I'm going to, then hand it off to my mechanics, the guys who do all of my mechanical crunch stuff, and hand it off to my freelance writers, and they'll fill in all of the fluff writing. And then I sit back and collect all the money. There's no money. But if there were money, I would be collecting it.
Monopoly money,
sure. So that's where this panel kind of came from. I've done work for White Wolf. I've done work for Catalyst. I've done work for a number of smaller houses. We produce our own book at Machine Age Productions. That's our new game machine site. And we do this for a living. So there's at least some imaginary credibility behind what I'm saying tonight. So then I break it up basically into a couple of concepts. And what we're going to do is I'm going to explain the basics of these concepts. And then we are going to, as committee, pick up 3 ideas for each concept. And then we will build the world out of those things. And we'll do it just bam, 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 just like that. So first, and this is in no particular order. Okay, so whatever concept you guys hone in on, that's what we'll start with. And then you build out from there. So you have concepts like currency. Okay, and this is the thing that makes the world move. This is the thing that everybody wants to exchange to one another, right? This might actually be literally money, but it might not be. It might be power, it might be favors, it might be secrets. That'll depend on the kind of game we're playing. You have characters. Who is everybody playing? This is important in a game more than it is in a book, because in a book, when you're writing your novel, you already have a character in mind. You have someone's story who you're telling. So giving a broader idea of the sorts of people who exist in this world that your players are going to be interested in is important. Okay? You have culture, which is just basically, you know, what your societies look like. Climate, and this is things that are specific about the world that impose on everything else. So there's a literal idea of climate. If we are building a world that is cold all the time, that's going to affect climate and currency and character, very obviously. The other way you can look at climate is the things that are different than our world. So are psychics real? If psychics are real, then that's a climate issue. Okay. And then the other important thing is conflict. And basically conflict is what stands between your character and the currency that they want. And sometimes that's what you start with, sometimes it's what kind of is created out of putting all of these other things together. So, basically, let's start with, culture, right? So, what's important about the society that we are playing in that imposes enough on the rest of the game? Where are we, culturally speaking?
And the way that we're going to do this is basically show of hands. We're going to try to keep it organized, because if everyone's talking over everyone, then we're not going to create anything except for animosity.
Right. And this stuff is random, too. The other way we could do it, we could start with climate. Is there something different physically about this world or developmentally about the species that we're playing? Just somebody shout something out. Go ahead. Right, you in the back.
Setting the revolution.
The revolution. Okay, so we're in a culture of revolution. Okay.
Culture. Alienation from family. Attachments are bad for various reasons.
Okay.
Possibly linked to a Buddhist concept of attachments or suffering.
Okay.
Attachments equals bad.
Okay. One other kind of cultural idea that we might vamp on. Kings, houses... street level. Monkeys. No, that's not a good one.
A real separation between status and non-status. So you're either very poor or you're very rich. There's no in between.
Okay. Okay. So we're looking at this sort of this. There's a revolution happening. That is the state of things right now. That is a cultural issue. It is setting. It is backdrop. Right. So therefore, it's not necessarily the conflict, because it's just the thing that's happening. So you have haves and you have have-nots, and obviously the revolution is coming probably from the have-nots. It would be really weird if it were coming from the haves.
Why not make it a genocidal thing that the haves are trying to wipe out all the have-nots?
Interesting, but let me ask you this. Who's going to want to play that as their good guy? I mean, look, if you guys can make it work, we'll go with it, but...
Technically, that's not a revolution, that's a crime.
There's a thin line, but there are a couple delineating factors.
Right. Maybe.
You have cultural elites using the masses to, you know, ferment their own, like lower elites using the low masses to try to take over the upper elites.
Right.
But like the French Revolution.
Right. Then you have your bourgeois using that. Yeah. Well, then, okay, so then that's a sort of a quick, fair question, because that'll imprint on then next the characters. Who are we playing? Are we playing have-nots, or are we playing haves, but not haves enough?
Haves, but not haves enough.
Okay, haves, but haves not enough, or have-nots? Have-nots.
Have-nots.
Show of hands.
Raise your hands. Have-nots.
That looks pretty clear.
Okay, so we are definitely the underdogs. And so then we ask ourselves, why are the underdogs removing themselves from attachment? Because this is the other thing we have down here. Does that still work, or do we need to toss it?
You can be traced. Your families can be traced.
Okay. Okay. So our have-nots are trying to erase themselves from the culture, right?
Because they used to be haves.
Did they used to be haves? Some of them? Maybe?
That's punishment.
Okay.
That's punishment. You lose status.
Okay. So we're talking about, from this, we're talking about character, right? So this is the people that your players are going to be playing at the table. So we're talking about possibly, we're all have-nots. We might have been haves, and it might be our punishment. What other kinds of...
It might not necessarily be punishment.
Okay.
It could be, I mean, if you're going on the one Buddhist concept, it could be the way to enlighten yourself.
Okay.
So that therefore the have-nots are, their ultimate end goal as characters, or at least as one character, could be to, this is how I plan on ascending, this is on how I plan on traversing.
Okay. So one option is just your screwed haves. One option is that you're actually looking for some kind of higher ideal. So, but then socially, culturally, or are we talking spiritual here? Like, is this, are they actually seeking some kind of, like, Zen state? Or are we talking about, like, a egalitarian communist thing where they don't want there to be anybody who haves?
Haves are a corruption. Because they're attaching themselves too much, they're messing everything up.
Okay.
They need to be torn down for their enlightenment.
Okay. So now we're going to jump around a little bit, because now we have commented on culture. And if I had a whiteboard, we would do this on a whiteboard so that you guys could kind of see if this is all evolving. And that's how I personally recommend doing this. You know, you write down the sorts of things you're filling out, and then you jump around on the whiteboard.
You like House.
Yeah, you do it exactly like House. That's right. It's never lupus.
There's actually a website called Mindomo.
Yeah.
And it's like mind mapping, where you can like throw out ideas and you can start connecting with like linear equations. It's like free software.
Yeah, any kind of mind mapping software will do the same thing. Personally, I like the physicality of a whiteboard, and I like having big imposing whiteboards in my house because it makes me look really important. And people will come in and go, "What the hell does that say? Oh God." But we have stepped into a situation where we have to change the climate of the world. Because now we're assuming that there is something spiritual going on. And that's why there's some, you know, some sort of thing. So what is this spirituality here? Are we talking about, are these people, are the haves, are they gods? Are they psychics? Are they magical? What is it that makes there some kind of supernatural thing?
They're living in nightmares where the have-nots are living in happy dreams. And they're waiting to wake up, and that's the ascension, is waking up.
Okay, anybody? Yeah, I know. Oh, I'm going to put it down because nobody said anything else. So,
it reminds me of the Matrix too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it does have flavors, although...
Well, then here's what I ask you about that. It reminds you of the Matrix too much. What game are you playing right now that does what you wanted to do as far as playing the Matrix?
As far as playing the Matrix?
If you wanted to play the Matrix...
I wanted to. Oh, okay. Well, I don't want to, but...
Let's assume that there are people out there who do.
Okay, then...
Well, the idea wasn't really based on the Matrix. It was based on the Aztecs and the Mayans' beliefs.
Right.
Yeah.
They believed that they were living in a dream state.
Yeah, but Matrix stole it from...
Wherever it came from doesn't matter. The point is that there's a hole in the market,
okay.
Effectively, because you're talking about a game with dreams, and there's that other movie that just came out all about dreams and waking up and controlling things. So that's actually, it's a good premise. It's a hole in the market, so it's absolutely viable. And even if it is too much like whatever, gamers want to play their favorite movies, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I'm not going to say I play World of Darkness to play Twilight, but if I did, that would be okay too.
At least then you'd have an excuse to angst.
A little bit. Yeah.
I sparkle. Kill me now.
I'm a White Wolf Rider, and I love being a White Wolf Rider. Just putting that out there. They should pay me. More stuff. Okay, so now we are talking about then. Now we've jumped down a climate. We are talking about this world where there are haves and have-nots, where there is revolution as the back set, is not the real one. It is this world of dreams, right? So now you have the haves, and they are existing in a nightmare, and I guess that influences everything else, right? Because they have the power, so everything sucks. The haves want to reset things so that everything is a good dream, or so that everybody wakes up, right? Okay?
They just love being haves. They don't want to wake up, ever.
So the have-nots, I mean.
So the have-nots.
Okay. So, assuming who we're playing, the have-nots.
Yes.
Okay. So then, climate is a dream world. Going back to characters. So now you're playing haves who have been punished and have lost the control over the dream reality. You have these people who are trying to wake everyone up. Who else are we playing?
People who exist inside this real world that people are dreaming in.
Tell me another way. Re-explain differently. Use different words.
Okay. Let's say if you are dreaming somebody who's never been put to sleep. This is a dream world that the haves and have-nots exist in a dream state.
Right.
There is the world, and, you know, you're sitting in a bed sleeping. So there are people who have never been put to sleep, per se.
Okay, so people from the real world who are influencing the game.
Yeah.
Wow, that's very meta. And that might actually be something that you would, like, that's something that you would sit down with your mechanics guys and say, okay, my players are actually taking on the role of the people who are dreaming. And then you would hand that off to that side of things so that you would also you'd have kind of like a dual character going on. You have the players and then what they are playing in the dream world, which is awesome, but not world building. I love that idea, but it isn't world building. Go ahead.
Hey, not to go off topic, but we're doing this dream direction, but
sure.
I'm wondering what if that's more metaphorical? And what if the currency that people want is sunlight? And we're talking about like a 19th century... Or there's some environmental condition where sunlight is rare. Like, I'm thinking, like, in London in the 19th century, people would get rickets because they didn't get enough sunlight.
Okay.
So then you have a division between haves and have-nots. Haves are kind of an allegory to what the upper classes in, say, Victorian England, where they live in gardens, the dream world, that's like beautiful gardens, everything, and they're living in a social structure where they're at the top, and that is the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the dream world. Everybody else, you're the cockneys in the gutter, struggling to survive, like, in the darkness. And maybe it's not exactly that setting. Maybe it's, the world is different. Like, the world has a cloud cover.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or you're living underground. Like, there's something dangerous on the surface of the earth. And
like light sunlight has to get filtered in through a mirror system to the people that live lower, and the people that live upper have more access.
Our dark clouds flash pollution at a certain level, and only the haves can have them. Are in the towers and on the top of the towers that are above this layer.
Right. So they're the only ones with currency.
So we're talking about currency in terms of sunlight, because that's real basic, real easy. Okay. So now we're going to jump back down to climate, right? Because now we're talking about the physicality of the world here. So what do we want to do? Do we want to have just a weird Victorian world? Are we looking more towards something tower-based, like, what's the D&D setting? Doesn't matter, whatever.
What if it's less of a tower and more of an actual entire infrastructure built that keeps the sunlight? Instead of it being like a tower or a spire, there's actually a roof, almost, that the entire city is built upon.
Caves of steel.
So it's an arcology, yeah. Right?
Or like Gas Giant, like the Sky City of Star Wars. You can go sci-fi.
Right. Well, okay. So then, but that's important then. Let's say that. Now we're talking about dreams, so we can kind of blend genre here a little bit. But for the purposes of, are we talking sci-fi? Are we talking not sci-fi, fantasy? Are we talking vaguely historical but different? So sci-fi. Hands up. No? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know about sci-fi. Sci-fi is like, you have technology and technology. Like, why don't they just solve it with technology?
Well, because you're dreaming and you can't read.
How about diesel punk?
Mm. Okay. Oh, like a steampunk gone wrong?
Well, no.
Diesel's 1920s punk.
But it's like pollution from
combustion engines.
Okay.
Industrial Revolution gone wrong. Environment. Only certain people get to be above the smog layer.
Pretty much has to be high fantasy, because they're going to dream things like magic dreams to make stuff. You know what I mean?
Once we have the concrete nature of the game down, we know what the characters are doing and what their conflicts are and that sort of thing, then that stuff, you hand off to the mechanics. Like, that's really... How big your world can be changed by your characters, that'll be discussed when we get to conflict and conflict solutions. But I don't know that it has to be high fantasy. Our game is set in the very nearish future sci-fi setting, and it's all narrative control. So the players are really determining what happens. But they are sticking with genre limits, so it's still a sci-fi horror. Even though they can technically do anything, nobody's going to say, well, there's a dragon. Because
then, do the players know that their characters are dreaming? If they don't know that they're dreaming, then from just a reality kind of base, you know, from my mind, logically, it would go, well, you know, yeah, if I'm dreaming, I might dream of dragons and, you know, trolls or whatever. But if I don't know that I'm dreaming, and this is the world that I'm, like right now, if I'm dreaming right now, this is the reality that I've created, yet there's no dragons, because I don't know that I'm dreaming, so you don't necessarily have to go.
So characters will stay...
So maybe the reality that the dream reality is like a playoff of their reality to an extra degree or extra level.
Right, so what we're saying...
Or is the reality set forth by the haves?
Well, right, and that would be then, therefore, so reality is also a type of currency, right? Because then basically the haves are the ones who control it. And so maybe you're initially scrounging around for sunlight or whatever you're scrounging around for. And then as you build power, as you level or whatever your character design is going to be, then eventually you're actually controlling reality, right?
Oh,
okay. Back there?
This started to sound a lot like the Stargate episode Beneath the Surface, where the upper classes would print memories on the lower classes to make them forget that there was an upper level, that there was a life beyond the work that they did. Mm-hmm. So maybe it seems like we're floating between like a magical thing or a spiritual thing or some kind of metaphysical.
Well, right. So right then, you're right. We do need to nail it down. So we were talking about diesel punk. Here's the thing about punks. All right. Here's the thing about all punks, and it's an important thing for you to know when you go off to do your own work. Steampunk is hot now in costumes. It is hot now in, like, some design aspects.
It's gaining momentum on the tabletop miniature world, too, with Malifaux.
Will it?
the old Malfo is like exploding.
Okay, but and ultimately that's the problem. So if you're far enough ahead of the curve or just at right of the curve,
right.
If you're willing to take that risk, that's the way to go. But the other end of it is
next week. You're good.
Right. But then the other problem is, will you? Obviously, probably not. So is it a gamble that you're worth taking that it's still going to be around? Do we still want to rely on punks, or do we want to rely on something a little bit more stable?
Well, that's a good question.
I think the world and setting enough. The world and setting is detailed enough that it can hold its own weight, even if you removed punk from it as remove that adjective.
Yeah. Well, sure. Okay. We can juggle the terms now, but for the purposes of design, yeah. Let's just say.
Can you
are
not
we a
just mesh genres? Like, can you not just do like horror, steam, Victorian?
That becomes a little too broad.
Well, yeah, the problem is that we have an hour, you know, and my beer is getting warm because that's how
that
I do
is
this.
The problem.
And
I
so
take care of that.
Before. Yeah. So and so like you know you're talking about the scope of game. Are we doing like a big massive genreless game that you can add anything to? No, we're not. So
it seems like the two that it would fit the most in, if we're not going to go the route of one of the comics, would be sci-fi or fantasy.
Right. Okay. So then just show of hands, do we want to go with a punk or do we not want to go with a punk? Punk? Not punk. Okay. So not punk. Sorry, guys. It is a risky endeavor to go punk. We're not going to lie. So, I went punk and it worked out.
I have plaid pants. I win.
You do win.
It's not even risky at this point.
It's not risky for you. No.
What if
we
just do sci-fi?
Okay. So are we? But now, so going back to.
You can do something. Go ahead. You could do something that's not where sci-fi. I mean, a lot of people now are concerned with the oil spills and everything about or the environment, and we were talking about before pollution, so that's not that far off in the future.
No.
You can put that into your world. And
yeah.
Like we were saying, sunlight is currency. What about, okay, sunlight, and you add to that clean air and clean water, just, you know, having pollution be the ultimate
I like the water
conflict, and having the commodities being the clean air and the clean water.
Yeah, water sounds awesome.
One of the awesome things that we mentioned was that the have-nots were living in a nightmare where the haves weren't. So you can play into that to say that the people that rise above the clouds or the thickness of it all, actually they're exposing themselves to harmful effects that's causing them to go insane. Like, you know, take our own atmosphere, for example, right? You know, you go up high enough, the air gets thinner.
Yep.
You know, there's less ozone. So, you know, from that same aspect.
So the bad guys, the being bad guys, is a climate issue, yes? Does that make sense? Everybody's, like, high, and that's why they're happy, but also not able
yeah.
to make good decisions.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. So bad guys are high. Got it.
Bad guys are stoners?
Well,
stoners on sunlight.
Weird.
Yeah.
Stoners on
sunlight. You want them to be a stoner.
Well, no.
They just have, like, well, they might be lucid. I don't know. They might have, like, you know, a warped sense of reality.
Right.
And that's what's
causing the reality.
Right.
They're being corrupted by their elevation, basically.
Right.
Sun madness from the desert.
Yeah, right. And it's what we would do is we would make up something. We would call this this illness that happens to
right.
people for these reasons, and we would
so
make up some science.
Space
madness.
Northern European in Australia has a big problem with skin cancer. Like,
sure.
They get sick a lot because of too much sun.
Right.
And so maybe that's the dichotomy. It's like you know, the people underneath that are suffering from too little, and maybe
right.
people above who have an abundance of riches that are suffering from too much.
Right. Okay, everybody suffers from too much, which brings us back into that spiritual concept of, all right, fuck it, we'll just wake up. How bad could
right,
it be?
Yeah, just the haves don't realize they're suffering.
Right.
Right.
Sure, because they're high.
Mm-hmm.
Woo!
Okay. So they're all suffering. It's
yeah.
just...
Exhaust the revolution. All right. See, and this is the point. Ultimately, all of these things tie back into each other. And that's for tight design, because if you just have, like, there are eight things happening and they're all over the place, then it doesn't feel tight. It doesn't feel like a cohesive world. So if everything kind of interlocks and moves back to itself or to another thing and then back to itself, then you don't end up with strings and you don't end up with, like, okay, I get that there are elves on motorcycles. I can't understand why there are trolls on motorcycles. Also, why are we hacking? I love Shadowrun. 25 years of history, I love Shadowrun. So then I'm still looking for, let's see, we've got all sorts of climate issues, we've got some currency, whether it's on the lower levels, just trying to breathe and have sunlight and not die, and then eventually as characters progress, they are actually going to be struggling for control of reality of the dreams or for waking people up, whatever. So there is actively a revolution happening. That's not the conflict that we are dealing with. That is a part of the environment. That is the set dressing. So now that we have characters, we have who they're kind of fighting against, that sort of thing, what are the active conflicts that matter, the ones that you actually have to pick up dice and roll for? What is the conflict that our stories are going to be about that is between our characters and the currency that they want?
Well, if it's going back to the sunlight thing, like structures above the clouds, like, and say the structures harvest this light so that it's distributed among the masses. Say the structures are breaking down or something's going wrong with the system that feeds out currency to all people.
Okay. The system is broken. So then are we fixing the system or are we just trying to destroy it entirely?
Well, for the main part, you probably want to fix it because we don't want another way to get this currency.
Okay.
And without it, you might not have it at all and won't survive at all.
Right. Okay.
Maybe we're trying to exploit it.
Well,
right.
But the key thing is, it's breaking down in a somewhat random fashion. So there's certain spots that get the full sunlight, certain dark spots, and because of this, you get territory wars between the haves, and you get little conflicts between the haves. We're using the have-nots to battle, to conquer territories, to grab more of the resources within this formal United City.
Okay.
So maybe the characters can be the have-nots that are, like, let's just take Shadowrun for example.
Yeah.
And, you know, twist that into our game and say, okay, so the characters, the PCs, are the have-nots that are hired by the haves.
Exactly.
To do their dirty work.
Exactly.
To gain, you know, with a promise. Perhaps they know that their bosses or their whoever they're hired by, you know, they know who it is or not, regardless. You know, I guess their end goal is like, oh, I'm a have not, I want to be a have.
Okay.
And then they get to become a have, and then there's like a whole new set of problems.
Well, the only problem with that is that we have already established that revolution is the setting. Revolution is the backdrop. So if you don't have characters doing what is the setting,
right.
If they're just shadow runners who are working with the system, or under it, or around it, or whatever like that.
Wouldn't there be a few have not or haves that would also be part of the revolution? I can't. Right.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the characters. Yeah, you did come in late. So the characters that we've been talking about focusing our stories around are like have not haves who have become nots because they are being punished or they are part of the revolution. We have ones who are actually seeking this sort of spiritual statement where. Fuck it, we all gotta stop and wake up. And then, did I warn you guys about language? Sorry. And then I think the third type we were actually talking about were just straight up have-nots who want. And so that's, they're trying to redistribute it, whether they're doing it for, because they're, you know, reds or not, it's, that's what they're doing. So the actual revolutionaries.
I have a question about,
yes.
I guess something that we're going over here, that I hear repeated, is that the revolution is the setting. Does that, am I to interpret that, or how I perceive that is, as it is the setting, it is going to be a perpetual problem that will exist as long as we're in this setting. There's going to be no solution to this revolution.
The assumption would be that throughout the course of the stories that we are telling, the revolution is happening. And it's going to happen free of what our characters are doing.
Okay.
It's like, you know, Casablanca, you guys, somebody has seen it, sure, right? So there's war happening, there's crap happening, but that's not really the intimate story that's going on. It's just the dressing around. It's what makes the MacGuffin more complicated to pick up. So what I mean when I say it's set dressing, it's a part of the climate. What I mean is, you're in Fallujah or whatever. There are guns firing. There are bombs going off. The system is being destroyed. So whatever else you're doing, whether you're trying to build, repair, take down, break down, win, there's some crazy guy with a bomb to his chest, or you know, there's some political maneuver going on, and that's why it's set dressing rather than conflict. Now, we can still borrow from that to use it in our conflict, but it will happen whether the characters are actively part of it or not.
Which meaning that the characters can still actively influence said revolution to either make it go on or come to a close.
Yeah, that's going to be a game scope issue eventually. Okay. When you go, okay, so what's the end game here? But that's kind of that's more
but
on the crunchier side.
Farther along, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
this is just the straight up. This is our setting, and then boom, let's build from there. So go ahead.
Yeah, that's interesting, especially when you're talking about Casablanca, because it seems like you have the two camps that are in conflict. You have the status quo camp, and mm-hmm. you have the change camp. Mm-hmm. And that's also true. That's also the dynamic in Casablanca. You have the corrupt German authority camp.
Right.
They're the status quo people, and you have the guy trying to get out, who's the change camp, the revolutionaries.
Right.
So we have that here too.
Right.
And if the PC is Rick, like, his dynamic is which side are you going to ultimately go with?
Right, right. And that'll be a kind of conflict as things. So then, that's fair asking. The temptation to become a part of the haves, is that one of our conflicts? Is that a regular problem for player characters, or is that just like an occasional thing? Like, is there regularly a threat that you will go from being a have-not to a have? Is that a thing that will come up? Is there a temptation to power, basically?
Well, I mean, that's more character-driven instead of
temptation.
That's why we're talking about conflict, not setting.
Well, it's desirable, but it's like winning the lottery. It's not something that you could stumble into.
Well, my point is it?
If you have a revolution, you're going to have an active group working to do that generally, unless it's just mass chaos.
Right.
And so somebody from the top is going to want to bribe somebody from the bottom to exactly. undercut it.
Sure.
So you can bring that into a specific game if you want, and you put a little blurb about this does happen. You can sell your friends out and hurt the party members and you can come up. Yeah.
Okay. So one of the conflicts we're definitely talking about is accidentally or on purpose becoming a have. Becoming a have. Okay. So, we rocked through that really, really fast. Well, normally what happens when we do these things is somebody will say one thing and then somebody says something on the totally other end of what they would prefer to do instead. So, you know, you guys... no, we should totally play bunnies. Screw this, we're playing bunnies. That has not happened, and so things have moved very quickly, which is good. Okay. And so now we can... Right. And this is normally the point where you lay it out and you have your outline... And then you make your design statement, which is something that David talks about in his panel, which is basically like, when you hand this off to writers who are going to butcher your baby, you have this phrase, this thing that you absolutely want them to stick to. One of the Mage the Awakening books that I worked on, the premise sort of thing that I was handed, the line that I was told that I was supposed to hang on to as I was writing is that Atlantis is not good and that the source of magic is not good. So going from that, then everything else I wrote, I could kind of come back to that line. Do I want to do A or B? Well, whichever one is more true to the statement. So now that we have this sort of larger setting here, what's the statement, the truth about this game setting in a small enough one-sentence chunk that anybody I hand this off to is going to get my vibe? Go ahead.
Both the Eloi and the Morlocks are smart.
Say that again, but louder.
Both the Eloi and the Morlocks are smart. Because this is like a little bit of a scene, you know? Like, you've got the Eloi living in the dream, haves, you've got the Morlocks, rainy, dirty underneath. But in the time machine, they're both naive, both stupid.
Right.
These guys aren't naive.
Which is awesome. What if I'm handing this off to a writer who refuses to read the classics? Which could happen.
Oh, well, then you could attach a copy of the time machine. Right?
The book,
they're a writer, they
the
should.
The movie.
Not on a deadline, they're not going
to. Not on a deadline. I don't have enough time. You hand this to me and I have to write it in a week. I'm sorry, pal.
The only way to win is not to play. Everyone's losing in this setting.
We've got plenty of endgame for good things to happen.
Unless they wake up,
life is suffering.
They're going to go insane.
Well, it is.
Or they're going to go to be utterly deprived and poisoned. Or they wake up.
But depressing. So life is suffering, also depressing. The problem here is that within the setting, we are not in life.
Change for the sake of change is not always the right path to go.
Okay, that's one aspect. That is a truth within the setting, but it is the truth of the setting. Go ahead. Glasses, go ahead.
Yeah. Your best chance of succeeding may deceive you at any moment.
Okay.
That goes along very well with selling out your friends to the past.
Can you repeat what we're trying to create here?
Sure. Yeah, okay.
The one sentence thing.
So this is one sentence that boils down enough of our setting that it's a design statement. Yes, that's what we're talking about, and it's a one sentence that will bring you back. For instance, our game's design statement is ghost stories and space stations. So if I'm deciding whether or not I want to have this take place on the Earth or in a space station, I am going to lean towards space stations because that's the setting of my game.
Or, like, I guess in a more analogous way, if it's whether or not you set it on Earth or on a downed submarine. Downed submarine is much closer to a space station.
So that makes more sense.
So you use whichever one is closer to your design statement.
Right.
So wake up or your dreams will drag you down.
I like that.
Okay. Anybody else?
Your example was for this other setting, ghost stories and space stations?
Ghost stories on space stations.
Ghost stories and space stations.
Yeah. Because that gives you real quick the claustrophobia, what you're dealing with, and the sorts of stories that are being told all in one sentence.
And why it's novel.
He's real smart. Yeah, and why it's novel. I guess there's that. So, wake up, your dreams drag you down. Is that it? Is that the thing? Does that say everything we need to about the setting?
I like it.
Okay.
Like those stories on space stations, I know if I'm writing something, and I can grasp, like, Fillmore ghost story, Fillmore space station.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess
wake up is...
Like, Wake up your dreams and drag you down.
Well, the one thing about that is you can assume, like, this isn't necessarily like cover text. This isn't necessarily something that's going to market the game or the setting or whatever. This is something that if you hand it off to the writers, they have a fundamental knowledge of the setting. This is just their.
This is
like,
not your elevator pitch.
This is the mission statement.
Right? Yeah.
This is not an elevator pitch. Your elevator pitch will. Actually, our elevator pitch is the same as our design statement, but we got lucky. Generally, it's more things like, would you like to stab Thor in the face? That is...
No.
Yes, of course you would. The game is called Mythender. It is not out yet, but you should start looking for it already because it will be amazing when it's out. Okay, not our game. Buy it anyway. Go ahead.
So, would another way of saying that you're trying to communicate the tone, maybe to the... Or the vehicle,
or the genre,
to the writer, so that you get... Because
of
the same family of product from your
writing. Yes, and that's the idea. It is a little bit genre. It is a lot tone, theme. Yeah, whatever. You want it both as you're building, as you're on your whiteboard, manically writing all of these types of things. Then this statement will come out of it, and that'll help you fill in whatever you haven't filled in. It will also help you in handing it off to the next group of people. Yes.
So, like, sleepwalking through life is good because the dream is preferable to reality?
But it isn't. Because the dreams suck. The dreams are in a...
We don't even know what reality actually is.
Yeah, it's bad.
Do we know that? I mean, maybe it's not. Maybe reality is just the real world. And it's really actually not as bad as being stuck in an arcology that's full of Victorian jerk-offs and whatever.
The standard day-to-day setting is not a good place.
Right. So the mission to wake up is...
Yes.
Right. What does waking up do? What happens when you wake up?
Endgame.
Possibly
like
in
game. Your character dies. That's like, you know, like...
Right, yeah, that's the end game. That's the success.
Or the other option is that there's two stages to it. There's a low-level game and there's a high-level game. And when you're awake, you can start affecting the setting at a higher level. You feed hallucinations down through the sunlight
I think that's implied in the fact that one of the currencies is reality. So that's not even when you wake up. That's just when you're a half or approaching a half, right?
Yes, but that might be because they have patrons who are awake.
They are patrons who are awake. I mean, that's
No. The halves are not awake. They're just dreaming it up.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Something like class struggle and intrigue be useful phrases for a design statement?
Well,
is that a selling point or a game?
Class struggle? Boy, let me tell you, there are a lot of pinkos out there who play these games. They love it. Yes. And looking at the design statement that we're looking at so far, wake up or your dreams will drag you down, it is missing the class struggle that seems to be an important part of the setting. Do you guys see what I mean? So.
There's the dreams and the dragging down, that the reaching high and then being pulled down. So there's the fluctuation.
But if you have to explain that, it doesn't work.
Yeah. What about have versus have-nots in Dreamland? That's a really cheesy...
Yes, but now say it cooler. Well, I mean, you're on the right track. Now you just need something with punch.
Can we just add something to the end of the statement that we already have? Like, your dreams will drag you down into the gutter, into deeper, something darker, something that...
Into poverty?
Rich or poor, your dreams are going to kill you?
Is there a universal truth there? Like, is there something universal that you can tack on the end and make it work?
We're on the beginning.
Yeah.
Rebels and rabble need to wake up.
Rebels wake up, or your dreams will drag you down,
there
right?
You go.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's why they pay me the big bucks. Yeah, that totally works. And if I could spell rebels, it would be even better. All right, there you go. Okay, so then the design statement, as we've gone through and we've picked things apart, is, you know, rebels wake up, your dreams drag you down. So that sums up pretty nicely everything that's going on here. It doesn't really talk about the specifics of the world, like the structures physically. But maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe that's something that your players are designing at the table as they go. So sometimes it's going to be Victorian, sometimes it's going to be diesel punk. That's not the focus. The focus is this group of people versus this group of people in a bad situation, and everybody wants to eat or whatever. And so you have a little bit of room. And this is depending on the kind of game that then you're going to develop in the other aspect of things. Now you've got your setting. You can take the setting and make a novel out of it. All of these techniques absolutely work for any other kind of writing. It does not have to be game design. The big shift I find between writing fiction and writing for gaming is the character. When you're writing for novels or whatever, you want to actually go through and do very similar steps for the character that you are going to tell the story through. When you're bringing it to a table for players, you've got to leave that stuff out. That stuff has all got to be open-ended so that they can bring their own character to the situation. Unless you design a game where the characters are pre-designed and you're going to play this guy, that guy, or that guy. But that's a whole different argument. What am I missing?
I don't think you're missing anything. I think that they just didn't argue very much.
Okay, so then hit me with some questions. Let's talk about it. What do you guys want to know about this, about game design, about whatever? Go ahead.
I kind of came in late, as you know.
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued. Is there like a specific formula that you follow to create a game setting?
Give them the outline.
I don't know if you like already explained it.
I did. So I have these C words, and what I would do is I would be on my whiteboard, as I was telling you guys, with my colored markers, and you're probably getting a little hot. Maybe that's explaining. So what I have is I have currency, character, culture, climate, and conflict. Right? Sorry.
Currency, character.
And I found that no two settings start in the same place. So sometimes you'll start with climate, sometimes you'll start with culture, sometimes you'll start with, I want a game where everybody is after piggies, or, you know, whatever it is that they're going for.
Yeah, usually you have one cool thing that, like, makes you want to do it, and that would be one of those five things.
Right, and then you sort of build off of them. I like to do it in groups of little splats of three. So, like, three different ideas for culture, three different ideas for thing. And usually they're dissonant so that I can cut some out, and that's normally where you guys would fight. But you guys actually all built off of each other, so...
Like I said, we've been drinking.
Yeah, well, I mean, man, then we got to switch to whatever he's drinking. And that's generally, that's how I would do that. Okay.
And then currency, climate, character, conflict.
What do you mean? Culture.
Culture. Yeah, what do you mean by, like, culture and climate?
Sure.
Can you expand a little bit on each of those?
Sure.
The currency? And it means money to me, so...
Right. Currency is the overarching form of the MacGuffin takes. It is the thing that characters are chasing. It is the thing that they want.
The spice.
Whatever it is that makes your characters go from point A to point B. Whatever it is that gets your character out of the tavern is the currency. In the case of Dungeons and Dragons, currency is not gold. Wrong. That is a reward. That is a thing that you get. The currency in D&D is character development and magic items. Because when you are gathering gold, ultimately you are gathering it to buy spells and to buy magic items. Big, epic, wonderful, magical things. So currency, as far as I'm concerned, in building a setting in D&D, is absolutely magic items. And everything else is a form of getting to those magic items.
So it's kind of like the reward then. Why are these people? Why are they doing this?
Right.
Or the potential reward. Because it doesn't have to be a reward.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, World of Darkness, right? Sure, vampire. Everybody knows what that is, right? Werewolf, all that sort of thing, right? So the currency in vampire...
Secrets?
No, I want it to be, but it's not. The actual currency in vampire is the blood. Because it powers all of your magical wuju. It's the thing that you keep chasing after, and anytime you're interrupted in whatever you're doing, like, the prince stops you from doing whatever it is you want to do. It's usually in the way of you getting the blood to fuel the things to take over. So, you know, power sounds like it should be the currency, but ultimately the thing that you're really chasing is girls with pretty necks. Whatever.
I'm always chasing that in real life.
Yeah, right?
That's why it's a good game.
That's why it's a great game. The truth. Okay, so that's currency. Currency is whatever they're chasing, whatever motivates them. Character is, like, duh, who you're bringing to the table. And culture is the sort of social setting. So that's, like, are we in basically a feudal system? Are we in the middle of a revolution? Whatever society is the structure in which the characters have to deal. Climate is the physical real world or metaphysical real world stuff that changes everything else. So is it cold? Then that makes everything different. Are there psychics? That makes everything different. Is there magic? That makes everything different. So that's climate. And conflict is what gets between character and currency. It's really that simple.
Wow. All right. So that's good.
I'll steal my notes.
There will be a test. You guys know that.
What's the MacGuffin and talking about the blood stuff? It's actually like I really you're talking that mechanics is involved in that.
Well, sure.
Yeah, that seems like you're talking about a player motivation. Like, what's going to make the player as separate necessarily from what the character of the game might in a narrative sense desire.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to excite the player and get them moving, get them motivated.
Sometimes they bleed over. I like games where the two are similar, or when they're counterintuitive entirely. That's also hot, but that's, you know, whatever. I mean, you can't design a game without being aware of the gamey side of it. If you do, then I don't know. I've never seen one done well. Like, I know that there are games that are totally narrative, but they still have the game consciousness aware.
Thinking about that analogy to those other games, like, it made me think about this concept that we just developed, and I'll throw this idea out here. We're talking about dreams, we're talking about sunlight being the currency.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's a plant. You're not the people. That's the flip. It's like you're not.
Right.
But as you say, you don't realize that. And like,
your
dream is like.
Somewhere there's a field of daisies dreaming about this game.
That's it.
You're acting like people, but all of your powers and stuff are getting charged by sunlight. Like you need to get access to sunlight in order to be able to get power. Like that's the mana.
That is some trippy stuff. And that would, I mean, like, that would be something that, the thing about a neat idea like that is it would, everything else would need to be reshifted around it, and I'm not saying you couldn't do it, I'm just saying I'm not going to do it right now. You'd have to buy me, like, a couple of more shots.
You're not a roots, like, you're talking about, like, a mobile, like, an alien species.
Right, okay. That would be a climate issue. That would be where we would go in and go, oh, by the way, everybody's a plant.
And you wake up to realize that.
One thing. Penny for my thoughts.
Sure.
He's missing the game aspect.
No, there are definitely gaming conceits in Penny for my thoughts. Like, there's definitely an awareness of the fact that there is a point that you were doing when you were coming to the table. Like, otherwise, why would you be at the table, right? There is a story that you are coming to tell.
Yeah, that's what that was a rough one to discuss because I doubt most of the people are familiar with it.
Sorry. But what about the narrative underpinnings, such as, you know, the mood, the theme? Where do those fit into the basic model that you have of world building? You know?
Where isn't it?
They should be permeating the whole thing.
The theme, etc. Like,
well, okay. So the theme thing that you need to... Okay, where you need to express that directly is in that statement. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that tells you where it is. And look, okay, there are a million ways to build a world. There are, like I said, friggin' college courses on this stuff, okay? Like, a whole semester's worth of sitting in a room designing this stuff. You can do it for 13 years. I don't have that kind of time. This is the method that works for me. Take it, break it, use it your own way. If you need to have a part on there that's a C word or is not a C word that covers theme and mood, then bam, do that. I find that that all happens intrinsically as I'm doing these other parts. But if you need to start there, like if you need, I am playing a game about being happy, and you have to start from that point, then, you know, shift these categories. These are just, I found, the broadest categories to cover everything. And it happens to work out that they all start with the same letter. Go ahead.
Jason.
Do you have a business card?
Oh, yeah. Come, okay, so I'm Philomena Young. This is our game. It's at the Indie Press Revolution booth. And it is really awesome. And it's got a great pitch line, as you guys have heard. And, like, so do grab cards before you go. It's almost 3 now, so if you guys want to, like you know, do any other little questions.
Do I play a ghost on the space machine?
No,
you play someone that's being killed by ghosts.
Oh, yes, killed a lot. Terribly.
Ghosts or ghosts?
They can be both. They're ghosts. They're ghosts. But we have an adventure for zombies. Because they're basically functionally the same.
Right. It's just
ghost
horror movies. It's a horror movie thing.
Yeah.
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 They're bad.
Do you ever work directly with the writer if you want to get specifics?
Oh, you better. I mean, you better work with the writer.
But how much... If you want a specific narrative included in your world that defines what it does, I'm just asking out of curiosity.
Specific narrative? What do you mean?
The world has a history behind it, and so something brought it to that point, which I assume is mostly the writer's discretion.
How big is your publishing company?
No,
okay, so White Wolf hands me a history and my requirements and my word count, and they said, now go. When I do this for me, I don't need to tell me that because I know. It depends on how far removed from the core design is the writer. If it is somebody who you are working with and that sort of thing, then you don't need to define all that stuff. If it is somebody, if you're doing, like, now I'm working on a project for Terra Soul, and they do, like, a traveler adventure. It's its own setting, but it uses traveler's rules. I am quite removed from those people. I have now seen my boss twice. And he got me a t-shirt. That's cool. So from him, I need a design Bible. I need something that is more than this outline. I need something that tells me quickly the history and the setting and all of that sort of thing. So that's where you build a design Bible if you have a larger staff or a larger group of freelancers who are more removed. Because the other thing that you're going to run into if you start hiring freelancers, nobody has time to read all of your books. And if they do, then maybe they aren't really a freelancer that you want. It works for Catalyst. Those guys have actually read all of those books.
Or maybe you shouldn't pay them because they would be doing the shit anyway.
Right.
Yeah, like
pay them in books. Here.
Clearly they're going to buy
your shit. What we all get paid in anyway. But so it depends on how far removed you are from that core design and how big your thing is. Catalyst is a very different monster than I am. When we did Machine Zeit, we had a lot of White Wolf writers help us out and write for us, and we paid them even some money, I think. But so we had to give them these little blurbs. This is the information that you need to know. This is the narrative that you need to know. But we had to keep it short because they had only this amount of time to write this many words. So yes, go ahead.
When you mentioned a design Bible, what is something that you would have in that to kind of keep brief enough for people to read who are better write for you?
What do you got?
I would say, okay, so design document is... it's the same more or less everywhere you go, whether or not you're talking about role-playing games or you're talking about a video game. And what I would put in is basically everything that you guys have done today, except I would probably give about a paragraph to two on every single element. So, like, you should put in three things for everything. I would just give it a paragraph or two each. So you're really looking at about a three-page document that really just hammers out enough detail that they can really jive with that. They can really feel what you want them to deliver.
And then the other thing that you would do is you'd give them the outline of the book that they're working on. This is how many thousand words are going to this topic. This is how many hundred words are going to that topic. And that would be book by book. That's how you would line that up. Mm-hmm. Is anybody else raising their hand? Go ahead. Yeah.
What products did you work on for Shadowrun?
I think the only thing that you've got out right now is Six World Almanac.
Six World Almanac. I did two of the place settings in there. Peru and...
I think you just did Peru.
No, I did another one. Uruguay,
really?
Ecuador.
I don't remember.
Some of those South American countries.
But you've got a few that are coming up.
Yeah,
I'll be the in war book.
War, I'll be in Attitude.
Yeah, Attitude. There's another one. I can't remember. It's
the other thing that you guys have to know about, and this is what I was talking about with the steampunks, right? Or any of the punks. The book that he just had come out for White Wolf, he wrote almost a year ago, 2 years ago?
The book that I just had come out last week, I wrote... I started writing at Gen Con last year.
The
Signs
of the
Moon... was a year prior. It is supposed to, like, I guess they're not selling it here, but they have copies. They just got in print. And it's 2 years old now.
Right. So, like, you never know. It might be the book, like, it might be, like, this will be out next week on a shelf, because that's the magic they do. It might be something that you don't see for 3 years down the road.
So that's, it's very weird.
Or just,
like,
things get shuffled around. It just happens.
With Signs of the Moon, it's, as I said, it's going on 2 years. That was literally the first role-playing book that I've written for. And so, like, I'm worried because it was my first work. And I have stuff that, like, I did months and months afterwards that has been out and has won awards. So, like, I have stuff that's, like, that I'm really, really super proud of. And then this stuff that I wrote, like, this is, like, my trial run.
It might get you a bad rep.
I don't know. And, like, I'll just be like, I wrote it so long ago, I didn't know what I was doing. Please.
Now, remember, the important excuse as a writer is I was drunk.
Yeah. And it worked for Poe.
It worked for Poe.
It was perfect before editing.
Well, I love my developers. I'm not going to throw stones at them because, you know, that's mean, but yeah, it's usually true. No. This is
I don't even recognize this.
No, yeah.
I don't even know these assholes.
that's basically how that works. Okay, good. All right, guys, thank you very much. Come grab my stuff.
Come go to the Indie Press Revolution.